Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine. Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pacharani Nivasesa Sanivadi Paskajade Satarani. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Sam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha Panchakalpa Chubhascha Kipasindhavya Vitapatitanam Pavanevya Vaishnavevya Namo Namah. So today is March 4th.
Recording in progress.
Today is March 4th, 2022, VIHE, and we're studying the Nectar of Devotion, chapters 44, 45, and half of 46. So finishing up the Western Ocean with Madhurya Ras, and then starting the Northern Ocean. Our second class will be starting the Northern Ocean, Laughter and Astonishment. So hopefully we'll all be doing a lot of laughing and being astonished. So, our Nectar Ocean of Devotion, and this Western Ocean is focusing on the five primary Staibhavs, and today we're doing the last wave, conjugal, it's wave five. This is Nectar Devotion, chapter 44, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 351 through 37. So, the basic understanding of the conjugal rasa. And this Rupa Goswami gives at the beginning of each of these, that when the rati is nourished by the other bhavas, it becomes rasa. So you have the basic rati, the stai bhav, when it's nourished by the other, by vibhav, sattvika bhavs, anubhav, vyabhichari bhav, it becomes rasa. Now, something to keep in mind, and this was important with some of the questions that I got asked also, is that Rupa is only giving a very brief summary of Madhurya Ras. And especially if you compare it to the others, especially if you compare it to Suratude, which was huge. And he says, it's a topic that's unsuitable for those who have no taste for it, and it appears similar to mundane love. So that those who are sadhakas, who already have some of one of the other ratis, so this rati is not suitable for them. So this book is designed, not only as information, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, is designed as a guide for the sadhaka. But for those who have rati in Shantaras, in Dasya, in Sakya, or in Vatsalya, so the rati of conjugal love is not very suitable for them to study. It's not very appropriate. And the other reason is for those who don't have any rati, it looks too similar to mundane love, and therefore there can be a lot of misunderstandings about it. Therefore, he really just touches on it. And now for those who actually have rati in Madhurya Bhav, then for them there's Ujjwala Nilamani, which describes everything in great depth. Bhanu Swami has translated Ujjwala Nilamani along with the commentaries of Jiva Goswami and Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. So the vibhava, again, vibhava is the stimulus, and there's two categories, alambana and udipana. The alambana has the vishaya, which is Krishna, and ashraya, which is the devotee, and udipana is impelling. Right? So the vishaya is Krishna. Now, we had a question as to whether or not there's this type of relationship between devotees, and we've had this question about the other rasas also, and the answer is yes, of course. Devotees are servants of each other. Devotees are friends with each other. Devotees are parents of other devotees, just like the cowherd men and women. They're parents of cowherd boys, and they're parents of gopis. We have just in Dwarka and Mathura, so the various devotees also have parents. Krishna's queens have parents and so forth. And we also have married couples. Nanda and Yasoda are married, of course. Rohini and Vasudeva are married. There's so many married couples in Vrindavan among the older, again, not elderly, but older cowherd men and women, and in Vaikuntha. Vaikuntha is full of married couples. So here we're talking about rasa with Krishna. We're not talking about rasa between the devotees, but there's also rasa between the devotees, of course. And just like the Pandavas are friends with Krishna, but they're, you know, Draupadi's Krishna's friend, and Yudhisthira's Krishna's friend, but Draupadi and Yudhisthira are husband and wife, and the brothers are friends with each other, and so forth, and so on. And of course, these are there unmarried lovers in the spiritual world other than with Krishna or with Balaram? I've never heard of such a thing. So we also have, of course, these rasas in a material perverted sense in this world. But here, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is focused on rasa with Krishna. All right, so the vishaya for this rasa is Krishna, who has abundant beauty, who has abundant pastime. So it's always Krishna for all of the primary rasas, but Krishna in a little different way. Like in Vatsalya Bhav, it was Krishna without showing great opulence. Right? Krishna, who has abundant skill in the arts. Krishna, who's very attractive, and there's four items given for this attractiveness. He produces bliss in everyone by inducing their love. He produces the bliss of Cupid in the women by his soft limbs, which have the color of a forest of blue lotuses. He's attractive because every limb is embraced spontaneously by the young women of Raja, and he sports in the spring season like the incarnation of Madhurya Ras. All right, the followers of Lord Chaitanya were generally in Dasya Bhav with Mahaprabhu, though they might have been in Sakya or Madhurya or Vatsalya with Krishna. If we're going to get into Lord Chaitanya, that's going to be very complicated, and we're not doing that in this class. That you can do in a Chaitanya Charitamrita class. All right, we're going to look at the Vibhava Alambana Ashraya, and as we do this, I'd like you to meditate on which devotees who are in this rasa you personally find inspiring. Now, the Ashraya for this rasa includes the Dwarka queens. It includes the Vrindavan gopis, who are ostensibly married to other people, and it includes the Vraja gopis, who are unmarried. The younger Vrajagopis were unmarried. It includes what we call the Sakis and the Manjaris. Now, again, and I'm probably going to say this at least 10 times in this class, here in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami is really just touching on this rasa. So to go more deeply into this Ashraya for the Madhurya Bhav, you really have to go into Ujjvala Nilamani. So in general, we can say that the Ashraya are astonishing young women who have most excellent, freshest sweetness. Their hearts are mixed with waves of prema, and they adore Krishna as their own lover. Again, they can also include the Dwarka queens, who see Krishna not just as their lover, but as their husband. And he's giving Radharani as the most prominent. He's not going to be discussing the Dwarka queens here in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. He does that in Ujjvala Nilamani. So you notice for each of the rasas, Rupa Goswami is picking a dominant person as the ashraya. Sometimes he picks a few of them. And he describes their form and their bhakti. So Radharani's form, the abode of sweet nectar. Her blissful eyes steal the beauty of a chakori bird quivering with excitement. Her face defeats the fame of the full moon. Her excellent beauty exceeds the luster of pure gold. There's a much more in-depth description of Srimati Radharani's form and beauty in Majjalila 8 in the discussion with Ramananda Roy. Her Rati, and Radharani is a left-wing gopi. Of course, all of Krishna's queens and lovers exhibit some of this hard-to-get nature. it's something that is attractive in general. And we had a number of people ask questions about this, that why is Krishna so attracted by Radharani's neglect of him? And that he gets more pleasure from her seeming disrespect from when she acts as a respectful friend. Now, someone had a question about this verse in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Does that mean Krishna is getting more pleasure than from his friends? Well, that wasn't what Rupa was saying. He was saying when Radharani acts as a respectful friend, it's not as pleasing as when she acts as a seemingly neglectful or disrespectful lover. So this is part of the intimacy between men and women, and the fact that women play hard to get and that men have to chase them and conquer them is part of the whole male-female psychology, and this originates with the Lord. And Krishna's devotion to her, and that he, when he embraces her, he gives up everybody else, he immediately gets entangled in love. And when Radharani left the rasa dance, that Krishna left everyone else and followed her. And we had a question about this. How is this exhibition of pride her part of her highest love? And because she has the highest love, therefore she has some pride about it. There is pride. It's a vyavichari bhav. And everything we find in this world, we find in the Supreme. We find there. But this pride is not material pride. It's not lust, anger, and greed and pride of the demons. It's, wow, Krishna loves me. So that should be there by every devotee, but Radharani particularly, Krishna loves me, so he's going to follow me out of the rasa dance, which he did. Udipana, I find it interesting that Udipana, Rupa Goswami mentions the flute, and I was thinking about, again, the Dwarka queens. Now, we do know in Brihadbhagavatamrita, it is mentioned that sometimes Krishna and Dwarka will play a flute. I'm sure there's music among rich aristocratic people. They often also play musical instruments. But I was just wondering to what extent this isn't Udipana for the Dwarka queens or just for the gopis. And the sound of Krishna's flute makes the gopis forget the scolding of elders, the infamy from breaking social rules, and the terrifying treatment from their husbands. Yes. All right, so we're going to have a breakout room where we're going to be discussing which devotees who are in the conjugal rasa, this is the gopis and the queens, you find inspiring in service. And of course, there's so many gopis. Radharani has her eight sakis. Radharani is the chief among the eight Nayikas, the eight heroines. They all have their sakis, and then there's so many queens in Dwarka. We have the eight principal queens. We have the other 16,100 queens. We only hear from one of them in the Bhagavatam, whose name is also Rohini. So we're going to take 10 minutes for a breakout room to discuss which of these you find inspiring in your own service and why. Okay, we can start the breakout room. I hope that was enlivening. All right, we're going to look at the Anubhava, which is, of course, the intentional expressions of love, which can be with or without strong bodily movements. And again, I'm going to emphasize that these are described in depth in Ujjvala Nilamani for the conjugal rasa. Here we have glancing from the corner of the eyes and smiling, and an example given. If there's someone who needs to mute. That the movements of Krishna's eyebrows are just like the Yamuna, and the smiling of Radharani is just like the moonshine. When the Yamuna and the moonshine come in contact on the bank of the river, the water tastes just like nectar. So somebody needs to mute here. At the sattvic above, so this is when the heart is overwhelmed by sattva, and transforms the elements of the body, and there are eight sattvic bhavs, so all of them are there in Madhurya Ras. And an example, O moon-faced friend, seeing your body with hairs on end, the tears in your eyes, your choked voice, and your trembling chest, I can understand that the sound of Krishna's flute has melted your heart. The Vyabhichari bhavs, and their various causes related to both primary and secondary bhava, their stages, their strengths, and there's 33 vyavichari bhavas. And so all of these are generally manifest except for laziness, which manifests only after enjoying with Krishna, and ferocity, which manifests only when the association with Krishna is broken. And again, we had a question here about the Manjaris. Do they ever become ferocious? As if you really want to get into the various Anubhavs for the different categories of those in Madhurya Ras, again, one has to go to Ujjwalanilamani, where there Rupa Goswami is delineating. He talks about 350 varieties, and he says that that's just touching it of those in Madhurya Ras, and he talks about the different Anubhavs, Sattvikabhavs, etc. For the different categories. He does not do that here. So, example of frustration or indifference, it could be translated either way. Cupid, please do not excite me by throwing your arrows. Air, please do not arouse me with the fragrance of flowers. I am now bereft of Krishna's loving attitude, and so what is the use of this useless body? Example of joy. That rogue who plays in the forest near Govardhan destroys my firm resolve. He causes the bumblebee eyes of all the women of the world to taste his limbs as beautiful as lotus petals and produces waves of love play that surpass those of a young bull elephant. So I had somebody question me about the love play of elephants, and I actually looked up and watched videos of elephants. And I don't know, I would assume that the examples are given of elephants many times in the scriptures. I would assume that people who live in a situation where wild and domesticated elephants are common, they see their love play as joyous. And they often give examples, you know, for most of us, we're like, elephants, huh? But for them, elephants, both wild and domesticated, were very common sights. All right, Staibab. So, the steady ecstasy of conjugal love, steady ecstasy means the sthi bhav, is the original cause of bodily enjoyment with eight kinds of desires for union with Krishna. That was discussed previously in the Southern Ocean. And again, I'm going to remind everyone that this sthi bhav applies to Krishna's queens, to the gopis who are apparently married to others, and to the unmarried gopis, and there are some others as well. So this description of the Staibhav here is really very much a summary. And for all the other primary rasas, Rupa Goswami described degrees of intensity, right? He would describe like prema, pradaya, raga. He doesn't do that here. He does that in Ujjwalanilamani. The only thing he says here about intensity is just that the conjugal love of Radha and Krishna is never diminished by anything, by compatible emotions, by incompatible emotions. And he gives an example. He says, on one side lay dead Sankachuta, surrounded by frightful jackals. In another place, learned brahmanas recited praises. In front stood Balaram, like the full moon. But the lotus of Radha Krishna's love sprang into full bloom. Now let's look at an explanation of this example. So in Sanskrit, the jackal also means inauspicious night. We could say the prayers of the brahmanas were soothing like snow. Balaram was like the cooling moon. A day-blooming lotus flower withers in the night, the snow, and the moon. However, Radha Krishna's love did not. So the lotus of Radha Krishna's love should have withered in the presence of a dead demon who invokes fear, the Vedic brahmanas who invoke reverence, and Krishna's older brother who invokes proper behavior. But even amid all these different circumstances of soothing and disturbing effects, the lotus flower of ecstatic conjugal love could not wither. So that is the only explanation in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu of the degrees of this love. In Ujjwalanilamani, Rupa Goswami describes prema, sneha, mana, pranaya, raga, anuraga, and mahabhava, and he also lists subcategories of these in great depth. Yes, there's one in the footnote referencing Ujjwala Nilamani. But if one really wants to understand it, again, one would go there, and there are subcategories and so forth. Okay, and mana is unique to the conjugal ras. Pranaya is only there in friendship and in conjugal because it's a sense of equality. We discussed that previously. All right, separation and meeting in the conjugal ras, which Rupa has described for each of the primary rasas. So we had the same system of separation and meeting, which is described for dasya, sakya, and vatsalya, right? For servitude, friendship, and parental, each had the same categories of meeting and separation. In neutrality, it was just hidden and visible. And here in conjugal, it's vipralamba and sambhoga. So vipralamba has three subcategories: purvarag, before ever meeting, which was similar to the others, where there was a separation before ever meeting; mana, seeming anger, separation due to anger; and pravasa, separation by distance, which we also saw in the other rasas; and then sambhoga, or indirect contact, just one category here. And isn't there an anger in sakya ras? Kind of. We'll be looking at that when we look at the combination of rasas. But there isn't an anger in the other rasas that induces a separation. It's a different thing. Now, someone had a question about the fact that Rupa Goswami says that these can also act as udipanas. So, and that's true, actually, for all of the rasas. This separation and meeting act as a stimulus for the rasas. So they're part of the sthaibhav. They're part of the explanation of the basic connection, which has its meeting and separation. But they, in one sense, they also stimulate that basic correct connection. So one could think about these as udipanas. When you're separated, your love increases. When you're meeting, your love increases. And so forth. And once again, in Ujjwala Nilamani, there's far more detailed description of these categories and subcategories of meeting and separation in the conjugal ras. So this is just a summary. So purvarag, which means no meeting has yet taken place, where Radharani says, after seeing that man with the complexion of a new rain cloud, my heart is unstable and I can't do my duties. Now, I found it fascinating that Rupa Goswami gives an example of purvarag from Krishna's perspective with Rukmini, where Krishna says to the Brahmana, my dear Brahmana, just like Rukmini, I cannot sleep at night, and my mind is always fixed on her. Separation due to apparent anger, when Krishna was sporting with all the gopis in the forest, treating them all with equal affection, Radha left that place in anger because of his slighting her superior position. Okay, example of separation by distance. When Krishna left for Mathura, Radharani has been constantly crying. Her face is always wet, and therefore there is no chance of her sleeping. Another example of prabhasa by distance. When Uddhava said to the gopis, Lord Govinda, being afflicted by the arrows of Cupid, thinking of you alone day and night, cannot eat or sleep. I also found it interesting that Rupa's giving an example here of Krishna. And the question is this rasa so much more complicated that Rupa Goswami writes a separate book, or is it only because it is his original rasa? My educated guess is that it's the latter. That is because his rasa, he's going to it in that much depth. That's my educated guess. Because as far as I can understand, all the rasas are that complicated. I mean, just think of how much attention he gave to servitude in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And I'm sure that even that is not the full understanding. I'm sure that each of these rasas is unlimitedly complex. I had an example of sambhoga. Again, he's just giving one example. He says that Krishna embraced Srimati Radharani in such an expert manner that he appeared to be celebrating the dancing ceremony of the peacocks. That's it. It's the end of the Western Ocean, which is about the five primary rasas. And Rupa Goswami has a dedication here at the end of this ocean, which can have, as all of these dedications, two different ways of translating it. One would be, may the eternal soul, who has the beautiful form of a cowherd boy and who spread the bhavas to Rama and other forms, be pleased with this western section of the ocean of nectar. Another way of translating it is, may Sanatana, who nourishes the bhava of Gopal Bhatta and distributes the bhava of Raghunath Das, be pleased with this western section. And again, this was an analysis of each of the primary, five primary sthayi bhavs in terms of Vyabhichari bhavs, Rati, Anubhavs, Sattvika bhavs, and Vibhavas. So you have the dominant sthayi bhav acted upon by Vibhavas and Vyabhichari bhavs and secondary sthayi bhavs producing Anubhavs and Sattvika bhavs. Okay, we want to spend more time on the second half of this class. But we can take just a very, very few minutes here for questions. If anybody has questions. Vishalaksha.
Hare Krishna Mataji, can I ask or other person will ask?
Ask what?
Can I ask or somebody is asking already? Question, Mataji.
Yes, go ahead.
Thank you. Mataji, class is very wonderful and really it's a, means like a sweet tasting. But at the same time here, I want to know that it's very difficult to understand, like me at least. And here the gopis are really participating in the with Krishna. But here, like for example, I chant, so I'm participating in chanting, in hearing. But I'm not participating in really like gopis. So sometimes very difficult to understand. So is it these topics are really meant for our level at this moment, or we have to hear still as Srila Prabhupada said?
Well, first of all, consider that this nectar devotion was produced in 1970. And Srila Prabhupada wanted it in university classes for the public. So Srila Prabhupada also had us distribute nectar devotion to the general public. Also, when Srila Prabhupada set up the Shastra exams, he had the entire nectar devotion in the Bhakti Shastra. After Srila Prabhupada left the planet, the BOEX decided to put just the Eastern Ocean. That's just the first part in Bhakti Shastri. But Srila Prabhupada himself put the entire nectar devotion into the Bhakti Shastri degree. So this is obviously meant for everyone. Now, for those who are either have not taken up Krishna consciousness, you know, some university student or professor, and then it's just to give someone an idea of what is ultimate perfection. For those who are in Vaidhi Sadhana and have not yet realized anything of their Rati, one is supposed to meditate on the situation of the spiritual world. As Prabhupada writes in the Bhagavatam, one should be captivated by this information. That this is our goal. We should know clearly what is our goal. I mean, without knowing what is our goal, then how are we different from most other religionists in the world? Then also, we should expect that within our Krishna consciousness movement, there are those who have realized something of their rati and who are engaged in Raghunubha Sadhana Bhakti. And for them, it gives them guidelines of how to progress. So there's something for everyone. I mean, this is true. Even if we take a book like Bhagavad Gita, which is understood at different levels by different people according to their advancement. I mean, I was just speaking to this one gentleman who'd been in the movement 2 years, and he was saying how you know, for a long time he just skipped chapter one of Bhagavad Gita. He couldn't understand who are these people. And I had the same experience. When I first read Bhagavad Gita, I couldn't figure out chapter one at all. I mean, who's Duryodhana and Dhristajumna and who are these people? You know, I didn't have that background. It took me a long time to be able to relate to the story behind those names. But that doesn't mean we don't give Bhagavad Gita. We give Bhagavad Gita to everybody. Right? And there's so much depth in the Bhagavad Gita. So as one progresses, one finds deeper and deeper meaning. But still, we should be captivated by this information. It's something that we should meditate on as our goal, even if we're just beginners. Is that okay?
Yes, Mataji. It's very nice, Mataji. It's purifying, actually.
It is. It is purifying. Even if you're just a beginner. I mean, I first read Krishna book when I was a university student, you know, just starting to practice Krishna consciousness. And, I mean, I still can't say I understand Krishna book, but it really inspired me to take up Krishna consciousness. The first book that Bhakti Chuswami received was Nectar Devotion. I mean, we were distributing Nectar Devotion, again, on the streets. Prabhupada talks about, and Srila Prabhupada gives instructions to all devotees that everyone should read all of Nectar Devotion over and over and over again. He said at least 3 or 4 times one should read the whole Nectar Devotion. So these were instructions that Prabhupada was given to everyone. And I personally disagree with the fact that we only have the first fourth of Nectar Devotion in the Bhakti Shastri course, and that none of the other Shastra courses actually require the rest of Nectar Devotion. That's not what Prabhupada did, and so, not that anybody's asking my opinion, but
yes, Mataji, because here one of the person I read with him, he's so attracted to Nectar Devotion that I have to read with him every day almost.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I mean, well, that was Prabhupada's desire. And you can find quotes where Prabhupada, you know, look up on the Veda base, Nectar Devotion read, and see what you find. And Prabhupada's saying that we should read the whole Nectar, and Prabhupada never said only read the first part. Why would he have translated the rest of it? You know, it's just like... And when we read it, we should try to understand it. Not just reading it and going, okay. And I'm absolutely sure that had Prabhupada stayed with us longer and finished the Bhagavatam, he would have gone back and done a verse-by-verse translation of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu.
Yes, Sir is so attracted to that book which I have given him NOD. He attracted that he wants to me read. We read actually. He wants to read that only book.
Oh, very nice. Prabhupada Priya.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna. Yes, I just had that question that I typed in the chat that you said that we covered in the Southern Ocean, but
yeah.
Could you kindly refresh my memory?
I would have to go back and look it up. That's why I asked for questions like that before the class.
Okay.
So I can go back. I know it's there, but everything's
okay.
Not
okay.
Here.
Okay. Yeah, gotcha.
Right.
Okay. No worries.
Costa Rica.
Thank you, Mataji. I was thinking of, there are differences in the conjugal love, the mode of expression in Dwarka and in Vrindavan. But at the end of the Dwarka Leela, the 16,000 wives, they were saying to Draupadi that we are attracted to Krishna. And we see even at the end, they actually were stolen by the cowherd men, and they actually go to the Goloka Vrindavan. So, does it mean that all the love is going back to the Goloka Vrindavan?
No. Is Krishna has eternal pastimes in Mathura and Dwarka, in the spiritual world.
But these queens are in a different mood in the conjugal love. But
well, then some of them at least may be sadhikas who are still progressing. Just like, I'm pretty sure it's Ujjwala Nilamani, where Rupa talks about some of the women who were married to the Kurus and the Yadus, that when they saw Krishna, they thought, oh, we'd like to be married to him. But that's not going to happen in that lifetime. You know? But Krishna has eternally unlimited queens in Dwarka, in the spiritual world, that's their eternal position. And yes, Prabhupada Priya, what you wrote in the chat, I tend to agree with you. And one of the things I'm doing, you know, one of the reasons that I'm spending so much time on these PowerPoints is that I'm also distributing them widely among ISKCON preachers. And my plan is that when I finish all these, that I'm going to share them with the BOEX, and I'm going to say, look, you know, here's the guide for teaching the rest of Nectar Devotion. Can you consider putting the rest of Nectar Devotion as a required part? BOEX is what controls all the Shastic degrees in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. When you get a Bhakti Shastri degree, Bhakti Vaibhava, etc., your certificate is issued by the BOEX, the Board of Shastric Examination. And anybody who offers courses, if someone's saying we're offering a Bhakti Shastri course, it needs to be approved by the BOEX. So they have to approve the test, they issue the certificates, they decide what's in the courses. So my plan is to discuss with Atul Krishna Prabhu, who's the head of the BOEX, that Srila Prabhupada wanted the whole Nectar Devotion in Bhakti Shastri. Can we at least put, say, you know, the Southern Ocean into Bhakti Vaibhava and the Western and Northern Ocean into Bhakti Sarvabhauma as something required? I mean, that may even entail that I've got to sit down and write a sample examination for them, but I'd be happy to do that. Shyamananda Prabhu?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you very much for bringing us the Nectar of Devotion near. I have two small questions. One is, am I right that the Manjaris are mainly Madhurya Ras?
Yes.
Because they also serve, like they have a great deal of servitude. And the other question is related to that. Might it be that Rupa Goswami has written more about servitude because that's the common aspect of all the rasas?
That's my own belief. I don't have any pramana for that, but that is my belief, yes. Yes. And a little bit was mentioned about, indirectly about Manjaris in the Southern Ocean when Rupa brought up about Madhurya Bhav, and the way Prabhupada translates it was that some are directly enjoying with Krishna and others are engaged in Madhurya Bhav by hearing about it. So it's more indirect. So although some of the Manjaris also do enjoy directly with Krishna, that their mood is more as they're absorbed in it. So they're acting as servants, but their absorption is in this Madhurya Ras, even though they're not generally direct participants. Yes, Mahalakshmi, and then we're going to take a break.
Yes, from the perspective of Manjaris, it seems like it is a more attitude of servitude. Of course, everything is service in the spiritual world, but they are servant of those who are serving. And similarly, I was thinking of that there are other gopis that we do not hear that much that seem to have, from the perspective of persons who are just simply practicing, have an attitude towards serving and pleasing Krishna that may be much easier to understand it for oneself, like the other side of the gopis, the right wing of the gopis, seem to have an attitude that seems easier to understand for practitioners. So how do we see that?
Well, as you mentioned, the dasya, the mood of service, is always there. It's even there in some way, sort of, kind of, for those who are eternally in Shantaras, because everyone, Jivarasvarapaya Krishnaranityadasa, everyone is eternally a servant of Krishna. And as you recall, for each of the primary Saibhavs, there can be a mixture. Just like we read about how Balaram is primarily in Sakya Ras, but he also has some Vatsalya and even some Dasya, or Ugrasena, right, who's primarily in Dasya and has some Vatsalya. So there can be different mixtures like that. And the same is true with the conjugal rasa. There can be some where there's a mixture of Dasya. But it's different. Those in Dasya Bhav, remember one of the characteristics of those in Dasya Bhav was that they don't generally hear about the conjugal pastimes of the Lord. You know, especially like the younger brothers and sisters and the sons, and they're not hearing about it. And Prabhupada, because they have this mood of reverence. Now, I'm sure there's some exceptions. I'm sure there's some servants, just like there's some cowherd boys that are very involved in Krishna's conjugal pastimes. I'm sure there are some servants who are as well. But the Manjaris are different. The Manjaris are fully absorbed in the conjugal mood. That's their full absorption. And they render service, but their full absorption is in the conjugal mood. It's just that their mood is more to assist it rather than to be a direct part of it. And as far as different categories of gopis being more understood by different sadhakas, in Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, we're going to relate more to different devotees according to our material conditioning primarily. So like I've had people grown up in the movement who told me when they were children, they mostly related to the cowherd boys playing with Krishna, because they were children, and so that's what they thought about. You know, and it may be like that as well. You know, we have a particular conditioning, particular samskaras that are going to have us as Vaidhi sadhakas attract more able to understand certain devotees and certain pastimes than others. When it comes to somebody who's in Raganuga sadhana, whose rati has started to awaken, then the devotees with whom they can relate to is indicative of their ashraya. So if someone says, well, I can more relate to these categories of devotees rather than these category devotees, that is, again, that's part of the vibhava. Vibhava is what stimulates a person in their rati, in their basic feeling towards Krishna. And as that develops in a devotee, then there's a particular Vishaya of Krishna, particular way of seeing Krishna, particular way of understanding Krishna, just like we looked at with each of these primary Saibhavs, the way Rupa Goswami is going through great depth to explain Krishna as the Vishaya for each of the Saibhavs. It's the same Krishna, but he's related to differently and understood differently. And then the Ashrayas. Why is Rupa Goswami going to such great length to describe the different Ashrayas? Because someone who has that rati, they're also inspired. That's part of the vibhava. They're also inspired by the devotees who have the same rati. And as one progresses and one's rati becomes more and more and more specific, you know, okay, one may have a rati that I'm Krishna's friend, but it becomes more specific. Am I Krishna's city friend? Am I Krishna's country friend? Am I one of the older friends? Am I a friend of equal age? Am I a friend of a younger age? And then the particular devotees who exemplify that become the ashraya for oneself, becomes the stimulating shelter of one's particular rati. And the other devotees who have a somewhat different mood act as udipana. And those are devotees in other rasas entirely, or those are devotees who have different moods within the same rasa. So as one rati, if one is in Madhurya Bhav, as one rati progresses, one will be more attracted by right-wing gopis or left-wing gopis or queens or various personalities that really nourish one's own rati. And again, that becomes more and more specific, and the other ones act as udipanas. All right, we need to take a break now. We have a lot to cover in laughter and wonder. And I must say that I had so much fun putting together the laughter and wonder sections. So please take a 10-minute break. Please take a real break for 10 minutes and get up, move around, and so forth, and we'll see you again.
Hare Krishna. Recording in progress.
So we are now starting on the northern ocean of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And we want to specifically acknowledge for this presentation Bhanu Swami and David Haberman, who translated the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So we have auspiciousness for the start of the northern ocean. Again, two possible translations. May the Lord with eternal form, who accepts Vraja as his eternal home, being merciful out of great affection for the devotee, be satisfied with me. And another possible translation. Is may the person called Sanatana Goswami, who having great joy because of his devotion, was attached to living in the land of Raja, be pleased with me. So the contents of this northern ocean is Rupa's going to go through now the seven kinds of indirect ecstasies of devotional service, the secondary staibhavs, laughing, astonishment, chivalry, compassion, anger, dread, and ghastliness, in the same way that he went through the five primary staibhavs. Then he's going to discuss ecstasies of devotional feelings, compatible and incompatible, and then he's going to talk about rasabhas, or perverted presentation of mellows. So we're going to just a little review. The secondary staibhavs, they don't have a fixed alambana, unlike the primary rasas. They appear occasionally in any of the persons with primary rasas. So the secondary rasas appear only within the five types of persons possessing the five types of primary staibhavs. So sometimes in a particular situation, one among these five types of persons may experience a particular secondary rasa, and at other times all of these types of persons may experience a particular secondary rasa. So a little review from the southern ocean, fifth wave of what do we mean by these secondary staibhavs. So remember that we have the primary ones, neutrality, servitorship, friendship, parental, and conjugal, and then the secondary of humor, chivalry, wonder, anger, fear, disgust, compassion, lamentation. And in order for the secondary staibhavs to become staibhavs, the primary rati must become nourishing or selfless. So the primary rati has to nourish the secondary staibhav, and it has to go in the background, and then the secondary become the staibhav. So when these seven emotions exist as basic relationships, they take on a form of beauty, they form by the influence of a primary rati, exist in a particular devotee, exist in a particular pastime, and remain for some time, but they leave a permanent impression, unlike the Vyabhichari bhavs that do not. So these are, again, the seven secondary stai bhavs, hasa, vishmaya, utsaha, shoka, krodha, bhaya, and jugupsa. All right, so now we're going to be laughing. So we're hopefully going to spend the next 20 minutes or so laughing. Isn't that nice? Have laughter as a way of love. And Balaram is the presiding deity of the rasa of laughter. That's from the southern ocean. So this is Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 4.1, 1-30, Nectar of Devotion, Chapter 45. So basic understanding, and again, Rupa gives this for all of them, that the rati of laughter, when it's nourished by the other bhavas, it becomes hasya bhakti rasa. And what is the vibhava? What is the stimulus? So Krishna and persons performing humorous actions directed to Krishna are the alambana, the basic impelling, and the vishaya. Now, I want you to take some notes as we're going through this. as to which of these qualities inspire you in service. We are going to have a breakout room on this. So Krishna is the Alambana in the sense of being the Vishaya of the principal Rati, such as friendship, which recedes when laughter becomes prominent, and by being the cause of laughter that becomes manifest. So that's Krishna's Vishaya. In other words, if you're in Shantadasya and so forth, and Krishna is the Vishaya for that primary Rati, so he remains as the Vishaya for the secondary one. All right, an example of Vishaya, Krishna is the Vishaya. Krishna is saying to his mother, "Oh mother, I will not go toward the frightful old withered person. He will craftily put me in his begging bag." When Narada saw baby Krishna with frightened eyes say this, although he tried to suppress his laughter, he could not do so. So here Krishna as the Vishaya for the rasa of laughter, the Ashraya. So also if you could note which servitors inspire us in laughter. So laughter is generally found among youngsters or in the combination of old and young people. And it's sometimes found people who are naturally very grave. Now, in this world, children laugh about 200 times a day, and adults about 20 times a day. So also in this world, we often find laughter with youngsters or in the combination of youngsters and old people. So an example of this, Ashraya, Rupa Goswami gives two examples, one of a young person, one of older persons, and here with young persons, the cowherd boy is saying, "My dear Krishna, if you will open your mouth, then I shall give you one nice sugar candy mixed with yogurt." Krishna opened his mouth, but the friend dropped a flower in his mouth. After tasting this flower, Krishna turned his mouth in a disfigured way, and all his friends began to laugh loudly. I remember when I first read Nectar Devotion as a very, very, very new member of the Hare Krishna movement, I really liked this particular story. This one reminds me of a pastime with Lord Chaitanya. Once a palmist came to the house of Nanda Maharaj, and Nanda Maharaj asked, "Will you kindly check the hand of Krishna? Tell me how many years he will live and whether he will become the master of thousands of cows." Upon hearing this, the palmist began to smile. There's a similar pastime in Chaitanya Lila, where Lord Chaitanya asks an astrologer, "Please tell me about my past and future lives." And the astrologer looks at Lord Chaitanya's chart, goes into meditation, and he starts seeing all the incarnations of the Lord. And he comes out of his meditative trance, and he said, I don't know yet. And he can't figure out that he's seeing this, because Lord Chaitanya is God. And Mahaprabhu thinks that this is quite amusing. This particular story also reminds me of an incident with my godbrother Ambarish, Alfred Ford, the great-grandson of Henry Ford, that he once went to see a palmist who didn't know who he was. And the palmist looks at his hands and he says, "How many cars do you own?" So here this palmist is looking at the palms of Krishna, who's the Lord of everything. How many years will he live? He's eternal. Will he be the master of thousands of cows? He's the master of everything. And so the palmist was just smiling. Okay, Udipanas. There is the humorous words, clothing, and behavior of Krishna. So Krishna himself is very funny. The Anubhavs, quivering of the nose, lips, and cheeks. It's so much fun putting this together. Vyavicharibhavs, jubilation, laziness, and concealing oneself and one's feelings, right? Don't we do that? We're laughing. We're like, try to suppress our laugh. The Staibhav of the laughter, rasa. So humorous love is the basic connection, and there are six stages. Smiling, slight laughter, full laughter, open laughter, raucous laughter, and boisterous laughter. And again, please take notes on this. The Sanskrit is smita hasita, vihasita, avahasita, apahasita, atihasita. Now, we had some questions on this, and this is definitely confusing. So Srila Prabhupada has two categories, Smita Hasita and Vihasita in one category, and Avahasita, Apahasita, and Atihasita in another category. Clearly in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu there are three categories. So simply Rupa Goswami is saying that Smita Hasita is higher, Vihasa and Avasita are medium, and Apahasita and Atihasita are lower. And Bhanu Swami puts in parentheses what devotees he feels that these apply to, though there's nothing in Rupa's verse that indicates that. He may be getting this from another scripture. I don't know. So it's really unclear. And are these superiors or inferiors? Are these people according to age? So are the superiors older and the medium, or medium and the lower, or younger? It's very unclear. So I'm just going to leave it at that. All right, so Smita, smiling definition. This is smiling, but the teeth are not visible, and there's a definite change in the eyes and cheeks. An example. My dear Baladev, I've stolen yogurt. Charity is coming hurriedly to catch me. Hearing this, the great sages in the heavenly planets began to smile. By the way, Charity simply means an old lady. It's not necessarily a particular name. All right, Hasita, slight laughter. Smiling with the teeth are slightly visible. And an example, and this, of course, is a very funny story. I am your son, Abhimanyu. Krishna is coming here wearing my clothing. Believing Krishna, who said that, Jatila began driving her real son from the yard as he tried to say, Mother! The lips of Radha's friends became white with the luster of their teeth. Vihasita, full laughter. Teeth are distinctly visible, and laughing sounds are heard. All right. So, Vihasita, full laughter example. Krishna says, My friends, this old lady is now sleeping profoundly and is breathing deeply. Let us steal butter and yogurt without making any disturbance. But the old lady was only pretending to be asleep. And so she ended up laughing audibly, showing her worn teeth. I guess then they knew she wasn't sleeping. Avahasita, open laughter. This is a state of smiling where the nose becomes puffed and the eyes squint. Open laughter. This is also always one of my favorite stories. Yasoda woke Krishna and said, Why do your eyes look like they've makeup? And have you dressed yourself with Baladev's blue clothes? And a gopi laughed, knowing that Krishna had been enjoying the rasa dance the night before, but Mother Yasoda wasn't able to discern that. So when Mother Yasoda, she's actually seeing the remnants of the gopi's makeup, and she's seeing the gopi's clothing on Krishna, but she doesn't understand that. And so the gopis are laughing that Mother Yasoda doesn't understand what's going on. Apahasita, raucous laughter. This is tears from the eyes are added to the smiling and the shoulders are shaking. Actually, yesterday I was talking with one devotee who said something and I was laughing so much that I started crying. Right? Sometimes that happens. So an example, when Child Krishna was dancing in response to the singing of the old maidservant, Narada danced, his shoulders trembled, and his eyes moved. Due to his smiling, his visible teeth effulgent turned the clouds in the skies silver. Wow, that's really flashing white teeth. Yes, Atihasita, boisterous laughter. Smiling person claps their hands and leaps in the air. You can see why that's mostly done by young people. So an example, Krishna to Jarati. Your face is wrinkled like a monkey's. The king of the monkeys has selected you as his wife. Jarati to Krishna. I've already decided to marry Krishna, the killer of many powerful demons. And the cowherd girls began to laugh very loudly and clap their hands. So then there's indirect laughter. So this is sarcastic remarks, which also create atihatita circumstances. And an example is the gopis criticizing Kutila. They say, your breasts are like beans, your nostrils are like a frog, your eyes are like turtles, your lips are like coals, your stomach is like a drum. Because of your extraordinary beauty, I think you must be beyond the attraction of the sweet blowing of Krishna's flute. So this is sarcastic, which indirectly made the other gopis laugh. Yes, not well, and now, Narada Muni is a superior. So Narada Muni laughing is a superior. The palmist was a superior. So, yeah, we have superior. Cowherd boys could be considered medium, depending on their age. All right, so Rupa Goswami gives a note. This is only a summary of laughing ecstasy, and more detail is in the work of Bart Muni and in Rupa Goswami's work, Nataka Chandrika. Well, yeah, that's also true. The category, I found those categories inscrutable. So just like we talked about how Madhurya Bhav is much more described in Ujjwala Nilamani, so this Hasya Rasa is much more described in Nataka Chandrika. Okay, we're going to have a breakout room. And I'd like you to discuss what pastimes of Krishna and his devotees you find humorous. So it could be ones mentioned here, could be ones mentioned in the Bhagavatam, in the other works of the Goswamis. So what pastimes of Krishna do you find humorous? We're going to have a 10-minute breakout.
Recording stopped.
Hare Krishna.
Recording in progress.
All right, now we're going to go on to, I hope you all had fun laughing in your breakout room. So we're going to go now to astonishment. Kurma is, someone needs to mute. Kurma is the presiding deity of this rasa of wonder. So astonishment, this is Bhaktivasamrita Sindhu 4:2-1-13, and this is half Nectar Devotion, chapter 46, first half. So basic understanding, when amazed love becomes pleasurable in the devotee's heart by suitable vibhavas, it is called Adbhuta Bhakti Rasa. So the vibhava, the vishaya, Krishna, because of his superhuman actions, he becomes the vishaya. And thinking something Krishna does is impossible to understand. Yes, there are presiding deities in the five primary rasas. Those are all mentioned in the Southern Ocean. The Ashraya, all types of devotees. So any type of devotees can be the Ashraya for wonder. Vaikuntha devotees, Dwarka devotees, Vrindavan devotees, any rasa. Udipana, the stimulants, particular actions of Krishna. So I put here Korma, Krishna rescuing Nandamaraj from Varuna, the universal form, which of course inspires wonder in Arjuna, killing a Bakasura, expanding in the ras dance. Anubhava, opening the eyes very wide. Woo! Satvikabhava, especially paralysis, being stunned, tears, and horripilation. Vyavichari bhavs, in wonder, agitation, happiness, and mental agitation. So the stai bhav, this is amazed love produced by Krishna's extraordinary actions, qualities, and forms when they act as the cause of prema. I put here pictures of Krishna subduing the seven bulls, Mother Yasoda seeing the universal form. So there's direct and an indirect experience of love in amazed wonder. Now, here I ran into a problem because Srila Prabhupada defines these differently than Rupa Goswami. So I'm working with Rupa Goswami's. I'm just not sure if what we're dealing with in Nectar Devotion is an editorial problem. So Rupa Goswami describes that wonder can be directly perceived in three ways and indirectly inferred also. So direct perception by seeing something wonderful, direct perception by hearing about something wonderful, and the one that I really liked is direct perception by talking about something wonderful, and then there's also indirectly inferred. All right. So directly perceived by seeing, an example is when Narada saw Krishna simultaneously perform various actions with one body in each of the queen's palaces in Dwarka. His body began to quiver. All right. So I'd like to ask all of you, you can write in the notes, write in the chat, or if any of you want to raise your hand, we just have like a minute for this, a minute or two. What have you seen that has inspired you with a feeling of wonder? What have you seen? What wonderful things have you seen that Krishna's done? Now, I'm assuming you haven't personally seen Krishna in all the houses of the queens, but there must be something wonderful you've seen that Krishna has done in your life or in the life of some devotee that's inspired you with astonishment and wonder. So you can write it in the chat. I'd like everyone to write something. What have you personally seen where you were like, wow, Krishna is amazing? And please write in the chat, what have you seen in your own life in Krishna consciousness that you concluded that Krishna was amazing and you were struck with wonder? Something you directly saw. Oh, something more than that. Oh, something that you're willing to share. All right, I like this one. Yeah, how new devotees transform astonishingly fast. Holy name vibrating through Zurich during Rath Yatra. I wrote down hearing all the languages spoken in Lloyd Bazaar. I went to Lloyd Bazaar once and I was hearing dozens of languages. And I was like, wow, Krishna is amazing. Lavangalata, can you give one example about Krishna's perfect arrangements? Devasima, can you give an example, a specific example of something Krishna did that was amazing? Okay, how he gives realization about the same thing when read at different times. Okay. Nice if you could think of some specific example when you're like, wow, I can't believe this thing that I'm seeing. Annoying people become less annoying. All right, yes, they do indeed. Okay, best probably just write it in the chat because we're running out of time. We were listening to a particular preacher from another continent for a long time, many years being inspired by him. He has never before visited our part of the world, but suddenly a devotee we do not even know contacted us and asked if that person could come to our place for a few days to take rest on a preaching tour. Yeah, that's a nice specific example. Perceived how Gauranga's heavy crown fell up from his head and sat on the pitcher Bhakti Vinod as a real crown, not covering his eyes and not having his frame falling down. Wow, that's a really good example. Deity's clothes suddenly don't fit anymore because the deity's been eating too much. That's another really good example. Another good example I can give from my own life, we were building a school and how Krishna arranged for the money to be available. It was just amazing. right? That we needed the money on Monday, and then on Friday somebody came and bought 30 computers in my husband's business, and all of a sudden we had the money. All right. These next ones are going to be a little easier than this. So here's another directly seeing example. Oh, Yasoda, see here your little son with the moon-like face, slightly smelling of milk, and see here Govardhan, whose summit pierces the clouds. See, with his left hand, he holds the king of the mountains as if it were just play. Is this some magic? All right, now by hearing about, so experiencing wonder, this is, Rupa describes this as directly perceived Prabhupada as indirectly. When Parikit heard of the prowess of Krishna in battle, defeating Akshohinis of troops under Narakasura, his eyes opened wide and his hair stood on end. So now we're going to ask the same thing about hearing about. All right, if you could put in the chat something you've heard about Krishna. It could be in the scriptures. It could be something happening in the devotee sangha. What have you heard about Krishna where you went, wow! Oh, I like Vivangavata's example, yes. Heard of a devotee escaping across the border in Eastern Europe, including even guards shooting at him, and the bullets bounced off his backpack. Wow. Came in Mayapur in lockdown when I was told by aggressive manager here he will not allow. Later, with 3 days lockdown and 15 days lockdown, I stayed. Then the management was changed, and later I had service, which gave me protection. Wow, that's a seeing example. A hearing example. Something that you heard about. How devotees had to pay the rent. Oh, yes, yes, yes. Yes, well, one example about paying the rent that I heard from Ravindra Sarup. They needed $400 to pay the rent. They went out on Sankirtan, collected $25. And then some very tall, handsome man they'd never met before crosses the street and hands them an envelope that says, for Krishna, that had $400 in it. Everybody, please, everyone write something in the chat. What's something you've heard about Krishna? Could be in the Shastra, something you've heard about in the Shastra, or something from our daily life that you've heard about, not personally seen, but heard about, where you went, wow, Krishna is amazing. Come on, I've heard from some of you. Everybody, something that you've heard about. The Bombay case, how the temple was saved for demolition. Bhakti Tirthaswami sneaking around Russia, preaching when prohibited. He being completely dark in complexion. That's incredible that he wasn't found, although he's very, very dark and Russians are very light. How Krishna expands himself to be with everyone who wants to be with him in exactly the way they want to be with him, yes. How Prabhupada told the four couples who went to London when they would have a building, then he'd go be with them. And the Indian man appeared and donating a building. Tomorrow Krishna is smuggling Bhagavad Gita's into China. Excellent. Somebody else, all of you, please, everybody, something. I'm hearing from some of you, these are wonderful. Some of everybody, please, something in the chat that you've heard about where you go, wow, Krishna is wonderful. Krishna is amazing. Again, something, it can be something from the Shastra. Devamrita Swami became invisible in the eyes of a KGB woman, yeah. I think it's amazing that Lord Varaha comes out of Brahma's nose. Comes out of Brahma's nose. That's also funny. And he becomes bigger and bigger. The milk ocean waves produce emeralds from Canto 9, and the trees on are the hairs on the universal body. Excellent, excellent. Anything else you've heard about? And some people who haven't said anything yet. Something you've heard about that you go, wow, and your eyes open wide. Krishna protected Arjuna, made him defeat Jayadrath from dying. Oh, what an incredible story. Right? They thought the sun hadn't set yet. Mandara Parvata churning, like tickling to the, you mean to karma incarnation. Yes, how Krishna responds to each individual devotee in the personal relationship as described in the last chapter of Madhurya Kadambini. Wonderful, wonderful. All right. So, now we're going on to the one that I really liked myself. So, this is directly perceived by speaking about. And again, Prabhupada puts this as indirect, Rupa puts it as direct. Oh, how Nasinga Dev honored, yes. Vyomasura killed. Oh, right, you're thinking of so many. Now let's go to this one. This one is really interesting. So, Lord Brahma is talking to his associates. This is after he came back, after stealing the boys and calves. And he says, all the boys are dressed in golden clothing. Their complexion resembles a dark cloud. And they all have four arms. And the calves have similar appearance. While saying this, I have become powerless, and my body is frozen motionless. There is something even more astonishing. By each boy and calf is a Brahma seated on a lotus, narrating these wonderful events. So what's happening here is Lord Brahma's talking about what he just experienced. As he's talking about it, the act of talking about it infuses him with wonder. So I'd like us to think about, sometime we were talking about Krishna or the philosophy. I'm sure most of us are preachers. So let's say sometime we were giving a class. We're on the Vyasasan, whatever. We're giving a class about Krishna consciousness. And we start talking about something in relation with Krishna. And as the words are coming out of our mouth, our own speaking about Krishna fills us with wonder and astonishment. We start experiencing this happiness of wonder and astonishment. It could be informal talking. Maybe we're just talking with a few friends or one friend, or maybe we're chatting, talking over the computer, and we're talking about something, and the act of speaking about it fills us with wonder. Again, Rupa considers this direct, and Prabhupada considers this indirect. So, I'd like examples of when our own speaking, about Krishna filled us with wonder. So, if everyone can write an example of when your own speaking of something with the philosophy, with Krishna, something filled you with wonder, filled you with astonishment. So one person saying, talking about how Krishna can intimately, infinitely, individually reciprocate with each and every one of us. Talking about that, filling one with astonishment. Everyone, please, an example. I'm sure we have all experienced this. Once I was giving class, someone's writing, and talking about how, Prabhupada Priya's writing, about how Lord Chaitanya would go to Satyamata's house to eat the bhoga offerings, and it hit me in a new way. It struck me as so wonderful and loving and caring, and I became a little choked up and a struggle to keep speaking. Shamananda wrote, when one day in life I could distribute over 100 books without knowing how this was possible. I think that's an example of seeing. That's an example of seeing, not of speaking. While I was seeing Chaitanya's crown was falling, I said, Krishna Kripa, Krishna Kripa, since that was the name of the devotee, and by calling his name, I felt how merciful. I always get caught with astonishment when I try to describe some of the... it's going too fast. Some of the pastimes of the Sankirtan devotees in the early days, the effects of the holy name. Good. Another one, I remember once I didn't prepare well enough for Bhagavatam Gita class, for a Bhagavad Gita class in a temple, but I sincerely prayed to Srila Prabhupada and Srila Gurudev, and I realized how class went so smooth and devotees appreciated it. I was astonished how Guru Parampara works. I had a similar experience speaking at the Tirubhav anniversary of Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj that I hadn't prepared at all. I didn't know I was going to be asked to speak. And I was exhausted. Actually, I had just taught a class at the VIHE all morning, hours of classes. And I was mentally exhausted. And I was there in Vrindavan, in Krishna Balaram Hall, and the devotees asked me to speak. And I had no mental energy, and I was not at all prepared. And I got up, and I swear I gave the best class I have ever given in my entire life. And the whole time, I felt like just Krishna was speaking, and I was observing, and the entire time I was speaking, I was feeling astonishment. Okay, we have another one here from Rukmini. I was giving a Sunday class in Columbus, February 9, 2020. At the very beginning, I saw someone who had never come to the temple before. I welcomed him and asked his name. He said it was Aloysius. I told him I had been waiting many years to meet him. How do you say his name?
Aloysius.
I told him I'd been waiting many years to meet him and told a funny story. He was very pleased, as that day was his birthday. Wow, that is definitely astonishment by speaking. When narrating the pastimes, Bhakti Jiradamadar Maharaj, when narrating the pastimes of King Kulkshetra, taking his armies to join Lord Ramachandra, fighting with Ravana and Sri Lanka. Wow, I didn't even know that. Divasimha writes, when I was talking to a devotee struggling with mine, he was an artist. His wife made a joke of his art, so he was depressed. I told him to show his painting to Jagannath, as whatever in his mind is ultimately in universal mind of Jagannath. He was astonished, and I was astonished. Excellent. I have found many examples of this. Oh, Vinata, excellent. Yesterday I was giving a class, and during it reading from Bhagavatam 1, 14, and 15, as I was reading Prabhupada's purports, which are extremely relevant for nowadays world situation, I became overwhelmed with Prabhupada's presence and wisdom. Excellent. I've also had an experience, my daughter was saying, she also has this experience, where someone asks me a question when I'm giving a class, and I don't know the answer. And I start by saying, I don't know. And as soon as those words are out of my mouth, Krishna reveals to me the answer, and I know. And it's like, wow. Wow. Okay, so indirectly perceived by inference. And here are the examples given that when all the children opened their eyes in Bandiravan. So after Krishna swallowed the forest fire, he said, close your eyes. And when they opened their eyes, they were in Bandiravan in front of the incomparable banyan tree, and that they could understand Krishna saved us. They didn't see it. They didn't hear about it. They didn't. We're talking about it at that point. They could just understand, wow, Krishna saved us. So we don't have time. We was going to discuss this, but we don't have time. Wonder is a type of love, and it depends on love. Yes, thank you, Devasimha, for that other example. Now, Rupa says that we're not astonished by even extraordinary people we don't love. So I was thinking that there's a number of stories of very, very famous musicians playing million-dollar instruments, playing very complicated pieces in public, as if they're so pretending to be a street musician. So these are the kind of musicians that they're performing in music halls, and people are paying $100, $200 per ticket to hear them play. But they take their million or multi-million-dollar instrument out on a city street, and they're playing something very complicated, and nobody pays any attention. And I'm sure you've all heard stories like this. Everybody just walks by. Maybe they collect in donations $5. So if we don't love someone, if we don't have respect for them, even if they're doing something extraordinary, it's not that astonishing. Now, of course, we may have some appreciation of someone. We may have some appreciation for an Olympic athlete or something. but then there's some precondition of at least neutrality, isn't there? Right? You know, we know if we're going to be watching the Olympics that these are the world-class athletes. So we already have some neutral rasa. We already have some admiration. We already have some inspiration. But if we don't have any inspiration about somebody, if we don't have any regard for them, we don't even notice the extraordinary things that they've done. And the point here is that in order for a wonder rasa to exist, there has to be some rati. There must be some rati. And Rupa says, we feel astonishment at even slightly uncommon actions of those we love. So the parents feel astonishment when their children learn how to walk, although that's pretty ordinary. Right? So the idea is that the wonder rasa, this is true for all the secondary rasas, but this wonder rasa only exists when there is also a primary rati. Without a primary rati, there will not be a rasa of wonder. Now, another point that I think is very interesting, it's going to be made later in the Northern Ocean when Rupa is talking about how the rasas combined, is that all of the other rasas, so all five of the primary rasas and the other six secondary rasas, there's some vishmaya rati, there's some amazed love. When you're laughing, there's some wonder. When you're in fear, there's some wonder. When you're in neutrality, there's some wonder. When you're serving, there's some wonder. When there's friendship, there's some wonder. When you're a parent in a parental mood, there's some wonder. When you're a romantic lover, there's some wonder. In all of the rasas, there is some sense of wonder. There is some sense of amazement. Yes, Rukmini just put another example. Excellent. And Rupa says that if the dearmost person, if we feel wonder at people we love in this world, even when they do something that's not that wonderful, so when the most dear person, who's Krishna, does something extraordinary, anyone who has rati will feel astonishment. All right, so just again, looking at the relationship, there's the primary sthayi bhav that's nourished by the secondary sthayi bhavs and vyavichari bhav and the vibhava that produces anubhav and sattvika bhava. And here we're looking at the seven secondary ratis that act temporarily as the sthayi bhava or the basic connection. All right, so we just have like 2 minutes. I don't mind going slightly over, but not much. Yes, okay, an example of someone he never heard of. Yes, thank you, Rukmini. Okay, questions, Prabhupada Priya?
Yeah, on the diagram there, you had indirectly perceived, but I didn't catch explanation for that. There were the three categories of...
Okay, so indirectly is the cowherd boys... The example given, the cowherd boys were in that forest fire, right? The boys and the cows were in the forest, and the bulls and the buffalo and the goats also. So they were in this forest fire, and Krishna said to them, close your eyes. So they closed their eyes, and he swallowed the fire. And when they woke up, they were in Bandiravan. When they opened their eyes again, they were in Bandiravan. They didn't know how they got there. And so they didn't see Krishna swallowing the fire. They didn't see Krishna transferring them. They didn't hear about it. And at the first moment, they weren't talking about it. After that, they did start to talk about it. So they did feel wonder directly by talking about it. But at first, before they talked about it, they're just like, wow, Krishna just did something wonderful, I think. I didn't see it. I didn't hear about it. But I think he just did something wonderful.
Okay, thank you.
Kasturika.
Mataji, I didn't understand the point when you said the wonder should depends upon love, But we get astonished with so many things, or with people whom we might not love even. Like if someone does something,
there has to be some neutrality, Rati, or you wouldn't get astonished. At least there have to be some neutrality. So the example I gave is if a famous musician performs in public, but no one knows who he is, they have no affection for him or her, they're not astonished by their music, even though the music is actually astonishing. They don't find it astonishing because there's no rati. Whereas that same musician performing in front of the same people that they've paid $100, $200 to hear, and he's famous and they know his name, then they find his music astonishing. Why? Because at least there was some neutral rati. Neutral rati is admiration.
So does it mean that if we admire things outside, say for example someone builds or some great structures, so we admire, that means we have some inclination?
There's some neutral rati at least there. We're talking materially speaking. But there has to be some, okay. All of these rasas exist also materially. So yeah, otherwise without that you don't notice it. And if you think about that, there's a lot of wonderful things that we don't notice. Or they just don't, they don't mean anything to us. I'm sure we've also had the sad experience that we do something wonderful and people don't notice. They just don't notice. Or they don't care. Or we try to tell somebody, you know, wow, this wonderful thing happened. They just, it doesn't mean anything to them. And we're like, if they don't, yeah, they don't love us, exactly. Or maybe they're distracted in that moment or whatever. Yes, Rukmini.
So I'm still confused by this same point. So it seems to me that if, maybe this is because I just like being astonished, but like, it seems to me that if one doesn't admire and, you know, amazing act, then that seems to me like envy almost. So, I mean, a neutral, it seems to me that a neutral position,
I would agree with you, but neutral is arati. Neutrality
is arati. So you're saying there can't be any neutrality that is just without any rati?
The position of neutrality is in itself rati.
Okay, so someone who is just materialistic and then just admires great things, you know, great actions by other people, they're actually,
they'd have to have at least some level of neutrality to admire it.
Okay.
There'd have to be some level of neutrality. Neutrality meaning that I feel some inspiration in order to feel wonder.
So then the absence of neutrality, is there, I mean, what would you call the absence of neutrality then? Then it's just,
well, indifference is not neutrality. Neutrality is a kind of detached inspiration.
I see, okay. Okay, so then...
it's not a don't care.
Apathy.
It's not apathy.
Apathy is different from neutrality. Okay.
Yes, I mean, those in the neutral Ras have a kind of indifference to the world.
Mm-hmm.
But they have an admiration for Krishna. It's a neutral admiration for Krishna. It's not very active.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's kind of like if I just want to show up and see a movie star or a politician or a sports person and I'm not really doing much active. I mean, they may be pleased by the fact that I showed up just because they see that there's 10,000 followers and I'm one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I may be pleasing them in that way, but I'm not doing much active for them. But I have some, I'm not indifferent. Indifferent is a whole different thing. I'm not apathetic. It's just like, I personally feel indifference and apathy toward the vast majority of sports figures and movie stars and politicians. I really don't care. I just really don't care. You know, some big movie star, some big rock singer, well, doesn't mean much to me. I remember...
So I guess if I do admire, you know, some ability in someone whom I don't love, then I'm actually admiring, like, the ability in man or something. In other words, I'm indirectly admiring Krishna.
I like
or
that.
If I'm admiring, you know, some amazing thing about the universe, then, you know, that's Krishna's universal form.
Yes, beautifully said.
Okay, thank you.
I feel some sense of wonder just by hearing that. That, yes. Yes, beautifully, beautifully said. Thank you. Vinata?
I was thinking, as Kurma is the deity of this rasa, is it? And this rasa is, you said, present in all other, even primary rasas. So,
and all the other secondary rasas. It's present.
Yes, is that why worship of Kurma is so relevant for us, for revealing our rasa?
Could be. I mean, I like that. What you said also just filled me with wonder. That was really cool, especially since I worship Kurma. But Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati worshipped a deity of Kurma. And Bhakti Chiruswami in one class gave the reason for that is that Kurma is the lord of all rasa, swimming as he does in the ocean of milk. It's interesting that right near the end of the Bhagavatam, it's not the last verse, but it's almost the last verse, ends with Kurma.
Yes, I thought maybe that he is the lord of all rasas because,
yes,
as you said, this element is present in all the rasas,
yes,
which of this secondary rasa which he represents.
Yes, very nice.
So worship of him would help us to find out our rasa?
Oh, I don't know about that. But certainly he is the lord of all rasa, being the personification of wonder. Yes, emotions. Rasa means emotion, taste.
It makes sense that if he is the lord of all rasas, that he may reveal the rasa to his
devotee. He may, but maybe someone else as well, you know. Just like we just had Shivaratri, and there's all these stories about how Lord Shiva is guarding the Dham. So Lord Shiva may be instrumental in revealing a person's rasa. Or Vrinda Devi, who's engaging everyone in service, she may be instrumental in revealing. Or we read about how Lord Nityananda gives one entrance into the higher realm. So, you know, we're personless. We're personless. We're each persons. How we're brought to various levels of Krishna consciousness is personal. You know, I know some devotees who came to Krishna consciousness because they were looking for God, and they weren't even that interested in guru, and other people who were really looking for a guru, and they weren't that interested in God. I mean, you know, we're all different. I know people who their initial attraction to Krishna consciousness was Lord Chaitanya more than Krishna, and other people for whom it was Krishna more than Lord Chaitanya, other people for whom it was Srimati Radharani more than Krishna or Lord Chaitanya. We're all different. We're all individuals, we're all people. Don't look for some kind of cookie-cutter thing, you know. It has to be like this, has to be like that. There's different statements in the Shastra, and they apply to different people. All right, well, I hope you've enjoyed laughing and being filled with astonishment. And next week, we will finish all of the other secondary sty bhavs. Yeah, there we go. Okay, so next week we will go through all the other secondary sty bhavs, and then we have a week vacation for Gaur Purnima. Then for the last 2 weeks, for many of you, the time will be different. So the last two classes, I'm going to be giving it at the same time here, but the time here will have changed. We will have gone into daylight savings time. So for those of you who are not in the United States, or for those of you who are in parts of the United States that don't have daylight savings time, the last two classes after Gopurnima will be at a different time. All right, I will repeat that again next week. So we'll see you all next week, Krishna willing. And I hope you have a lot of fun this week, laughing and feeling wonder at Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Rupa Goswami ki jai.